Welcome to An Examined Education, a podcast recorded at the Cambridge School, a Christian classical school in San Diego, California, where we examine an education worth pursuing. On today's episode, you'll hear a conversation between Jim Hamilton, our language chair at the Cambridge School, and Jeff Yoder, your reliable host. Jim's going to talk about why we teach Latin, how we teach Latin at the Cambridge School. He's going to dip into ancient history, talk a little bit about education back then, and is going to make a case for the unique curriculum that we have here at the school. Jim is always a fun conversation partner. He gets super excited about Latin and about ancient history, so be on the lookout for some of these stories that come up and just how excited he gets about that topic, which is infectious for his students. Without further ado, I'm going to pass it over to Jeff Yoder.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, how's it going, Jeff?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm great.
This is so much fun because I know you so well.
I know. This is, yeah, it's really just going to be a personal conversation here.
That's it. I'm excited. And I'll probably get to know a little bit more about you. So that's good.
Yeah, great.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you went to school, and how you got interested in classics?
Oh, man. It's a long story. I could probably tighten it up a little bit.
We got time.
Here. Okay. I went to UC Irvine, started in 2006. And I believe I went in with the humanities undeclared and was thinking that I was probably going to go a creative writing route and took a few classes in that realm. Loved the professors, wasn't the biggest fan of my other colleagues, and was just sort of looking. Yeah, it was bad. and was looking for just something else that really piqued my interest. And I had actually taken Latin on a whim. I had a wonderful Spanish teacher in high school, but it just was not my forte.
Okay.
When it came to speaking it, just...
I think that's Italian. Ooh. Forte.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm confusing
it's
everything.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had signed up for Latin, honestly, just because it sounded cool and, it was old. And
right.
I always enjoyed ancient history when I'd had an opportunity to study it. So that just sounded like it would be a fun thing to do. And if it weren't for my professor, I probably would have just done it for my language requirement. But C.J. Armstrong just completely
nice.
Inspired me. He was a Lutheran minister getting his Ph.D. At Irvine at the time. And he now works as a professor at Concordia, just right next door. And we just really clicked as friends. And he was just such an inspiring teacher that just made me enjoy that class. It was an 8 a.m. class, if I'm remembering correctly, which is kind of bad for college.
Right.
And, yeah.
It'd be bad for me.
I was the only person in my freshman dorm getting up that early for a class. And I never missed it. It was awesome. And so by the end of that, I think it was... quarter semester, I talked to him about potentially switching majors and sought advice from him, and he encouraged me, hey, you know, if you can handle the pain of Latin, then you should totally be able to handle the pain of Greek.
Nice.
And so, yeah, I signed up for Greek the next year, and I was hooked. I switched my major to, technically, it was classical civilization.
Okay.
And so I focused a little bit more on the historical aspect of things, though I continue to take both languages for the rest of my time there. And yeah, it's been an obsession of mine ever since.
Nice. So then you came to Cambridge.
This is my seventh year.
Okay.
2013, 2014. I had been a year out of Westminster Seminary. I continued to go to seminary right after college. Just
okay.
Wanted to kind of learn more of what I believed, and also it was a pursuit of Greek some more.
Okay.
So that was fulfilled very much so at Westminster, which was great.
And what classes then are you teaching here?
I teach my longest standing class, 8th grade history, which covers Greece and Rome. And that is a class that I will never give up unless
nice.
They really, really make me. Yeah. Uh-huh. And this year, 10th grade Latin, honors Latin 4, and 11th and 12th grade Greek, which actually covers
nice.
3 years of Greek and 2. So that goes from honors Greek 1 through 3.
Nice. And then you're also the language chair?
Yeah, the language department chair. Yeah. So I cover... oversee the other Latin teachers and our other modern language teachers. Oh, I also teach advanced Latin reading. Forgot about that. That's an elective that'll be offered next semester.
Okay.
And so that is for the students that finish Latin in 10th grade. They have the choice to go on to Greek. They can go to Spanish. They can do a science option now. However, if they just as an elective want to continue on in Latin as well, they can join me in that class, which is just a little bit more of a freewheeling. They get to have a lot of choice in what we read in that class.
So that's awesome.
Really fun. Yeah.
That's great. So why do we teach Latin today? What's your apology for this?
Well, first off, I would probably address why Latin over Greek. A lot of people ask me that because once I tell them I teach Greek as well, and sometimes the word gets out that I like Greek maybe a little bit better.
Okay. Your secret's safe.
Yeah, yeah. I'm only swearing a podcast or something. Right. But
at least no one's listening.
Yeah. Latin is so unique in that, especially in the classical period, even at the height of the Roman Empire, Latin was never the lingua franca, meaning that it was never the language that was spoken by everyone around the Roman Empire. It was really just the language of that began in central Italy and was spoken most often by the educated elite of Rome. And so as a result, it remained like kind of pristine and untouched. So a tendency with a lot of other languages is just when they're spoken so much and they're spoken by the common people, not that this is a bad thing, but languages tend to become lazier.
Okay.
Or at least just simpler. The speech patterns are made to be easier and simpler. And Latin, it never really fell into that trap. So just grammatically, it follows its own rules.
Okay.
And so much so than any modern language that you would might possibly study. And so yeah, my students might whine a little bit about it. You know, there's exceptions here and there, but as a whole, it keeps to its own rules. And so that really helps in just studying, like really, really digging deep into the grammar of things. I'll constantly tell students that I truly never understood grammar until I took Latin. Like, for example, a participle, which is a verbal adjective, and telling the difference between that and a gerund, and maybe just being used as a present active verb and a progressive verb in English, like I am running, between the running man, between running is fun. Those are all different things.
Right.
And I never would have been able to differentiate those until Latin. I learned, you know, that's so specific, and a verbal adjective such as participle has adjectival endings, but a verbal root. So it's just this beautifully, beautifully rule-heavy language,
right?
That just can when you learn them, they're so universally applicable.
So it's not just to get a good score on my SATs.
No, yeah. And then I just only covered the grammar side of that too.
Right,
yeah. So
right.
not to balk at that idea. So much of the English language derives from Latin roots, and that's quite a valuable thing that we get from Latin. But that's just such a paltry gift that Latin gives us. I think ultimately the greatest gift from Latin is that to study it as a cultural artifact. We get to read classical Latin of the Golden Age is our primary focus, and to read the works of Virgil, Ovid, Horace, Julius Caesar, and to see the influence that they not only had in their own time, but on the Renaissance. You know, Shakespeare essentially just lifted a lot of ideas of his plays from Ovid's Metamorphoses, and it's one of those things. It's so many of those things are culturally ingrained in us that we don't really know, unless you really study Latin, you don't realize their origin actually is there. There's, you know, right. It's just sometimes I think they're just culturally ubiquitous things that everyone just knows stories like this, but they actually come from these Latin sources that are wonderful.
There is a difference, right, between classical Latin and ecclesiastical Latin. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about the difference and then why we've chosen one to teach over the other?
Yeah, so the classical Latin would be the Latin of, I mean, this maybe is a little bit of oversimplification, but that would be the Latin of Rome versus ecclesiastical kind of became the Latin of the church in kind of the later medieval era. As
okay.
And very grateful for the ecclesiastical sources. It became the language of scholars through the Renaissance and other periods of the sort where it was preserved in texts there. But classical Latin and specifically what's called the Golden Age of Latin is our primary focus because, to be frank, we want to offer our students the best there is of Latin. And while the ecclesiastical sources can be valuable, they're just not as beautifully written as the Latin of the classical period. And so that's to say, or the Golden Age period specifically, basically the centuries before and after Christ, the first century BC and AD, you basically had the combination of two different styles converging. One that was called Ciceronian, this kind of old school, very rigid, rule following Latin that was beautiful for its adherence to old forms, and then a new movement called the Neoteric movement, primarily led by the poet Catullus, who really just sort of appreciated art for the sake of art and sort of abandoned some of the epic topics of other classical sources, oftentimes that were mimicking the Greek epics. And the Neoteric poets oftentimes just wrote about daily life and farming and other things, just kind of appreciating the little things. Mm-hmm. And they had a much more playful style as a result. And you see a mixture of a lot of those things in Virgil, for example. Mm-hmm. And it really created this unique voice. I don't think Latin has ever been better during those two centuries. And so it's when we only have, you know, it's just one subject for our students to mm-hmm. teach. We really need to focus on giving them the best that there is to offer. So, you know, if this is their major, I of course would focus on other sources, but I'd be doing the students a disservice if they weren't reading Virgil, Ovid, Horace, and Caesar.
So can you walk us through some of that curriculum?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's here at Cambridge.
Yeah, I mean, all the way from the start, we've switched around books a few times. I mean, we don't really adhere to any specific curriculum that's out there as like in a published format. I generally like to trust in the other teachers that teach Latin here and hope that they bring their own personal flavor to the class, and a class that focuses on Rome, that focuses on mythology, that focuses on those things and focuses on reading primarily. So any books that we use in the grammar school talk a lot about Greek mythology and Roman history and have fun readings to do here and there. And I appreciate my colleagues. I know one of them, Donnie McNair, brings in the epigrams of Martial to his sixth graders, and he finds appropriate ones if there's anyone out there that, you know, knows Martial. And but they're just their epigrams are just kind of a perfect place to start, where the students get a taste of real Latin, but they're these nice short poems that he can walk them through. And it's wonderful. And so, I mean, so we get tastes of that in the grammar school, and things really start picking up and get serious in the logic school. And we have Ashley that's the front runner of seventh and eighth grade, and she's going over grammar in just heavy doses.
Yeah.
with those kids, and they learn all sorts of crazy things that English speakers generally aren't aware of, you know, case uses of nouns and the subjunctive mood and all of its nuances. And as kind of the capstone of the logic school, she takes the kids through large excerpts of Cupid and Psyche from the works of Apuleius, which is just another wonderful work. And then in high school, so we just have 9th and 10th grade as a required course for Latin. That's really where we get into the pure golden age. They start off with a little Auscalius, just falls just on the latter side of that, because he's just a good, nice, easy transition into Latin prose. But in 9th grade, they're reading a bunch of poems of Catullus about his dating woes, and which are great. They start Julius Caesar and read a wonderful excerpt of Book 4 from his De Bello Gallico, which describes a failed landing of the Roman troops on the British shore. And it's just pretty epic writing and a really cool description of specifically this standard bearer in the 10th Legion jumps out of his ship into the waves when his boat is far, far, far from shore and swims in full armor to face the British that are waiting for them, the Britons that are waiting for them on the shore. And it sort of shames the rest of his Legion into following him, and they're able to beat the British back temporarily. It's a great scene.
That's amazing.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Like the story.
Oh yeah,
is worth the class.
Oh right? Yeah, and even Caesar,
just the Latin, but the story.
Oh yeah, it's great. Even Caesar, because he kind of breaks his normal narrative in that moment where he's often just kind of descriptive in what he does, but he actually has the soldier quoting, you know, his desilite, like jump overboard, you know, lest we be dishonored, and it everyone else follows him. It's awesome. Yeah,
that's great.
And so they start Virgil at the end of 9th grade and read excerpts from the Aeneid 1, and that's continued in 10th grade. And there's nothing better to start the capstone class than reading sections of the Aeneid. We read swaths from Book 2. That's my personal favorite. It describes the fall of Troy, and it's tragic and beautiful. I just specifically remember it was your daughter's class even last year. The reactions I was getting from the death of Priam. Students are reading it just, this is so sad. Oh, it's so beautiful. Yeah, there's all these mixed emotions. It's really fun. But I think universally, students tend to love Ovid. That might be a little bit due to me. Yeah. I favor Ovid a lot, okay. And I try to keep my bias out of the class, but I think it shows in my excitement. So we read Pyramus and Thisbe. This year I'll be adding Orpheus and Eurydice to the curriculum, which is, they're both tragic love stories, mm-hmm. but both beautiful, beautifully written stories.
So it seems like we don't do a lot of composition or speaking in Latin. So can you tell me a little bit about why we don't do that? It's mostly what seems like reading, translation, that kind of stuff.
Yes, definitely. Our primary emphasis is on translation. And I think the best argument for that would be knowledge acquisition. Not that we don't value speaking and composition in Latin. Those are very good practices to learn Latin well. And it is emphasized when the students are learning grammar and reviewing grammar. But when it comes to giving our students the best of what Latin has to offer, mm-hmm. The majority of that's going to come from the works that have already been written. And while composition can kind of aid in understanding the nuances of Latin syntax and things, ultimately the best of what students are going to glean from Latin is from the written works of, mm-hmm. of those authors of the Golden Age. And so it just has to be the emphasis of that class. It's
right.
the quicker we get them reading, the more they're able to read. And frankly, the stuff that they're going to write isn't going to be as beautiful, or have this, you know, this, that cultural, heritage mm-hmm. that, reading works from the first century, offer.
That's great. So I think we can all agree that it's important to study classical history. So my question is for you, I guess, is in studying classical history, has it taught you anything about being a teacher or being a better teacher?
Oh, so much. So I point back to Quintilian so much. I am always awestruck whenever I read him and just how modern he reads. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like I'm reading something from ancient Rome when I pick up Quintilian. It is just as applicable today as it was back then, and I think really has always been. It's a testament to how just lasting material from the ancient, the classics are. I cite Quintilian specifically because he really did talk about character in teaching, and so many things that I didn't know my first year. I think as a new teacher here, my compunction was, I need to prove myself to be the knower. I have to show that I am knowledgeable of everything that I teach. There's nothing that I don't know in my respective subjects, and that I was imparting that knowledge to my students. And so the second part hasn't changed, but one thing that Quintilian kind of reminds me of is that so much of teaching is to have this friendly relationship, partnership with these students. And and so much of teaching and creating this space in teaching is focused around conversation. And that is truly like the classical nature of Quintilian that goes back all the way to ancient Athens. It's just so much of educating was conversational. Mm. And so I guess the most valuable thing that I learned from Quintilian is that finding common ground with students is that I need to show them also that I'm not the knower. I'm also a learner. In fact, that's my primary stance still. It's as I'm a learner that might be ahead of them on my trajectory in Latin and in Greek and Greek and Roman history. But I'm still constantly learning these things. And also I remember being in their position. I remember the woes of learning all the difficult case uses and crazy forms of Latin. And so there's this relatability, they know I'm not this like, I mean, it's pretty easy to tell I'm not perfect in everything when you talk to me, but
Jim, you're the best.
But yeah, this image that I tried to uphold of like, I know everything in Latin, I cannot be stumped. It's good to sometimes just say, I don't know. Let me look into that. And all right, I remember where you are. I remember I struggled with that too. It takes time. And
that's
so
great.
Yeah.
How do you balance that line between being friendly and, I think Quintilian said, too familiar? I think I'm not a teacher, but I think that would be difficult for me. I think I'd go too far over the line.
Yeah, this is definitely an area where I'd probably say I'm not perfect in that. I always can't wait till students graduate because most of them just like, hey guys, I really want to hang out with you. you guys are already kind of my friends, but we have to keep this professional relationship going here. You know, I'm still Mr. Hamilton in the classroom. but seriously, I think that comes with just at least setting those boundaries in the classroom. It's difficult. Our students are great here, and that's part of why I love my job so much.
So you did this a little bit in the speech, but for those who didn't hear it, can you tell us about mentor, where that came from, that term came from? Because I think that's a cool story and how it relates to teaching.
Yeah, absolutely. Mentor is just a minor character. He's briefly mentioned in the Odyssey as a man who was too old to go off to fight in the Trojan War. But Odysseus leaves him behind in charge of his own son. And I think, I forget the relationship, that Eumaeus is mentioned there as well, where he's in charge of Telemachus and Eumaeus as they grow up while Odysseus is away. And so he's essentially just a steward as Telemachus, because so much of the, you know, Telemachus' importance in the Odyssey is as he's growing into a man. And he doesn't have a father there to raise him in those things. In fact, Telemachus' name is a very a pointed metaphor to his situation. Telemachus means far off war or far off fight, which is just very appropriate to his situation. So he, Odysseus placed his trust in Mentor to sort of adopt that parental role that Odysseus couldn't fulfill while he was away.
Ah, and, so interesting.
Yeah.
And so cool.
It kind of scares me as a teacher where I go, oh, wow, I'm taking a parental role. Parents are entrusting me with this parental role when they put their students in my care. So that's it's something to think about and take my job seriously.
Right. It takes it so much higher than just giving out information.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? I'm not just imparting a skill, imparting knowledge.
Right.
I'm setting an example for students.
Right.
And again, not a perfect example, but as best as I can, I hope to impart those, and all teachers here, to impart, like I've mentioned in my speech, is like the soft skills that we might say in modern terms, which is learning Latin isn't going to cover all the bases when, you know, you go out into the professional world, when you when you interact in, and even in your personal life, you know, and you learn those skills from being around, interacting with, and imitating people whom you respect. And so, you know, we are reinforcing those values that students have in the home here.
That's great. Thank you, Jim. Thanks for being here with us today. I think out of all of the teachers that I interrupt, and I interrupt classes quite a bit, when I bring tours in, you are able to capture not only your students in the classroom, but our tour and myself, and we get swept up into the story and your excitement about it. So so glad that you're here at the Cambridge School. And thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I love when you interrupt my classes, so please keep on doing that.
Oh, I will.
Thanks for listening to An Examined Education. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, be sure to check out our website, schedule a tour, reach out to the advancement office. We'd love to see you. And we'd love to hear what you have to say about the podcast. So be sure to check us out on your favorite social media platform. Again, that's at An Examined Education. Leave us a comment, rate and review, and we'll see you next time.